Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the New Era Sense podcast. This is Nick, your host. I'm joined by Noah, our co-host. This is episode 9, and we actually have a few guests today. We are joined by Brennan Deltzer and Derek Lee from New Era Sense. They're actually part of our group here on Twitter and on our website, so you can check them out anytime you want. But they'll actually be joining us, and they'll talk a little bit about their joint piece that they're making coming out tomorrow. Just talking about their prospect rankings for the Sens and, you know, where people slot for them. It's going to be a very detailed piece, so I would love for you guys to check that out. We actually have a giveaway going out with that. It's a signed Josh Norris U.S. World Junior picture, which I think is really interesting because the World Juniors are right around the corner. So if you want to be able to win that, just check out our Twitter and we'll have the details for you. So, boys, I just want to ask you, how are you guys doing today?
You know, it's a good week as always, Nick. Good week as always.
Good stuff. And Brennan, Derek, how are you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Always a good day when I can hop on the pod and join you guys. So doing pretty good.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah, 2 weeks of holidays coming up. I'm doing great.
That's fun. Well said. I mean, I think we're all anticipating Christmas. It's a sort of different this year, though. I mean, you know, with COVID and everything, no gatherings or anything like that. So it'll be different for a lot of people. I mean, but I think the safe bet is to follow, you know, the restrictions that are put in place and, you know, make sure that next Christmas we have something to celebrate with our family. So that's important to keep in mind. But I just want to start off, boys. There's been a bit of recent news. Anthony Duclair actually signed a deal in Florida. I think it's 1.7 for 1 year. Sort of just to touch on that, in my personal opinion, it's sort of a missed opportunity, I think, for Anthony Duclair. I mean, we've heard reports that the Sens offered him, I think it was $4 million or $4.5 for 4 years. I mean, that's sort of unfortunate for him. I mean, it's the price you have to pay when you gamble on yourself and represent yourself without an agent, right? Especially in a global pandemic, nonetheless. So what's your guys' thoughts on that? I mean, and are you happy for Duclair? Do you think this is a good fit for him?
I mean, I guess he went ahead and bet it on himself and he lost that bet, unfortunately. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's another prove it kind of deal. And I mean, it's too bad. For him to go out and say that he doesn't need an agent. I mean, unless you're a superstar player, there isn't a great track record with things like that. Agents just help in so many different ways. And I think that this was just a very obvious situation of just what that cost him, because I think if he had an agent in his ear that was looking at him and saying, hey, look, you know, we can get this money elsewhere, or market value is actually around 5.56, then his argument would have made a bit more sense. Whereas right now, just the way that everything unwound and him signing that $1.7 million deal, what, like months after he got offered or reportedly got offered 4.25, that's got to sting. It's got to hurt. I'll miss him a bit in Ottawa, to be honest. Like, I didn't really think he was always a long-term fit myself. I felt like once their stars kind of came up and would fall into place, then I didn't really know how he would slot into the lineup. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Connor Brown and Chris Tierney, they're kind of more of those, like, they can fit into those third line roles and they can do really well. They can play penalty kill, things like that, where I just felt Duclair was a bit of a streaky scorer and didn't really have that other kind of upside. But yeah, I mean, hey, I wish him all the best and hopefully he can do well in Florida.
Yeah, you know, I think you touched on it. I think it's a perfect point that he was kind of always going to be a stopgap. I don't think there was ever any indication from either camp that he was going to be here long term and he was going to be the guy that we bring in. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like he was kind of destined to be. It just feels like with all the negotiations and everything that went on over the past year, like it didn't feel like there was much getting going with him, especially like you said, we saw with Connor Brown and Nick Paul and these guys, they got their deals, but Duclair just feels like he wasn't really supposed to be part of that. And, you know, if he was, then I get like, you know, like you guys said, it's a missed opportunity.
And I mean,
Yeah.
Sorry. Like I think like he was like in some ways he was a really good fit in Ottawa. Like I remember listening to Haley Salvian on TSN 1200 at one point, and she was talking about just the all the RFAs that Ottawa had kind of going into the summer, and she was discussing. She's like, you know, like with like being around the rink, the guy who was going out the most and like was kind of hanging out, like signing sticks for fans, taking selfies with fans, like really making time for those community connections with it was Anthony Duclair. And I think like that kind of stuff does go a long way. And I mean, like, honestly, like myself looking at Duclair, like, I don't know that, that's necessarily what I would have thought just with his personality. I didn't really have him framed as that guy in my mind. So, it's too bad. It's great. Like that, what he did in Ottawa, and it always sucks when things get soured and it's like, okay, like realistically, could we have made a deal with him for $2 million a year? Like,
yeah. And you know, especially for a guy, like you say, that was great in the community. You always want to see those guys stick around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way I see it, I mean, I just want to touch on one thing. If you put it in this sense, we signed Dadonov this offseason, right? And you just look at Duclair gets signed at Florida. So, I mean, if you put it in this sense, we sort of, you know, traded one for one Duclair for Dadonov. And you know what? I don't think it's a huge loss for us considering how we've shaped up after the offseason. I think, you know, there were still questions as to where Duclair would even fit on this roster. You know, I don't think it's a huge loss, but definitely someone, you know, I would have loved to see the Sens offer at least one year deal, at least, you know, just to keep him around. And it's just crazy that he turned down that offer that's been reported. And you know what? We'll see how it goes in Florida for him. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, I'll just touch on the fact that, you know, I'm somewhat happy for Duclair. I was a big Duclair fan, so you know, for the reasons that you guys touched on, I think the character flaws that were, you know, said to have been there, at least from my perspective, I didn't see any of that in Ottawa. So I think he's made some strides forward, although, you know, choosing to represent himself maybe speaks volumes in another direction. But what I will say is I'm happy for him to at least get an opportunity to showcase his skills in Florida. And I think if he's playing where Dadonov was playing beside Barkov and Huberdeau, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to go out there and score a ton of goals.
Do you think maybe that's, you know, why he chose Florida? I'm not sure if he got an offer somewhere else, right? But it's obvious that he's betting on himself to, you know, get that big contract. It's clear he signed a small deal for $1 million. And what if he's put on the line with those guys and he ends up with a really, really good season? I think he might have, you know, had the impression, oh, I'm going to Florida, I'm going to be playing with these top guys, I'm going to have a great year, this is good, I'm going to take a bet, I'm going to get a deal that I want next year. So what do you guys think? Do you think maybe that, you know, obviously helped the fact that, you know, his reasoning to sign in Florida? Like, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Nick. I honestly hadn't even really thought about it that much, but in all honesty, like I personally think that Jonathan Huberdeau is one of the best playmakers in the NHL. Like I think I would put him even in the top five category in terms of playmaking ability. And I think like that was kind of one of the things watching the Dadonov highlights when he was coming in, getting all excited about him. I couldn't help but notice how many incredible plays were set up by Huberdeau and Barkov as well. And I think like maybe he just did decide, he's like, and maybe he did take a little bit less money to go in Florida than to go to a different team, because maybe he saw this opportunity and thought, you know what, I can put up 30 this year. Maybe I'll go down that path, and then next year I sign my big deal. You look at Taylor Hall in Buffalo, and he did a similar thing. He signed that 1 year deal for $8 million, and I mean, I'm sure he could have gone to a better contender than Buffalo, but he knows that he's playing with Jack Eichel. He knows that he's going to be playing with one of the best centers, offensive centers in the league, up and coming centers, and he's going to have that ability to have a big contract year and get paid next year when maybe there's more money on the table. Because let's be honest, right now, I think owners are keeping their wallets pretty close to their pockets right now.
You know, I'm really glad that you mentioned Taylor Hall there. That's what I was going to say right off the top. Feels a lot like what he did, man. Signing in Buffalo, he knows that he's not going to be like, he knows that he's going to be the one of the top guys there. He knows that it's only a 1 year deal. It's kind of cynical that way, because he knows that It's a 1 year deal. So if it works out for, if it works out for him, great. Then Taylor Hall, he has his new home in Buffalo. But if it doesn't work out, then they can trade him elsewhere and still get value back for that season. It feels like a great situation for the both of them. And I really like how Duclair kind of put himself after a bad situation in Ottawa, or in representing himself with Ottawa, putting himself in a good situation and getting a contract with Florida.
I'll just play devil's advocate, I guess, and say that Duclair probably didn't have a ton of options. I think a player that's been on, what, six different teams now?
This is six and six.
Six and six, exactly. So he's bounced around quite a bit. It's probably a bit of a different scenario than someone like Taylor Hall, who had, you know, probably like eight teams trying to get him. Yeah. But at the same time, is Florida the worst case scenario for Duclair? Absolutely not. Like, you know, like we said, he's going to play on that top line. He's probably going to get some good minutes because they lost some key players, Dadonov being one of them. Obviously, I think all of us here would gladly take Dadonov over Duclair for the same amount of money, right?
Oh, yeah. I have same amount of money, same term. You couldn't give me an argument why Duclair would be taken over Dadonov.
It makes me wonder, though. Like, I wonder if closer to when he became a free agent in the original months ago, if there were more offers on the table that got turned down for more worth, because to me it seems like there's just less and less money. I feel like Hoffman, Duclair, and some of the other guys that are holding off now kind of held off thinking that there might be more money becoming available, and I feel like it's the opposite. Like, to have to tether expectations from 5.5 mil down to what, 1.7, like, that's like I mean, I know he doesn't have an agent, but that's pretty crazy. That's pretty big drop off.
Yeah, and look, boys, on another topic, another guy that actually, you know, sort of has been around, sort of proved himself in a sense, you know, hasn't really found a way into the NHL yet. And speaking of our UND boys, this is a guy on that team who's a very good leader, I think, and very good player nonetheless. This is Jordan Kawaguchi, obviously well known, I think, for a lot of fans right now, because we're all watching the UND games, I think, more than ever, since that's the only hockey that's been on. But I think a lot of Sens fan has sort of taken a look at Jordan Kawaguchi, and a lot of us have seem to think, you know, that he'd be a perfect fit here in Ottawa. And I think giving him an opportunity to you know, stick with some of his friends at UND and coming here would be a great opportunity for him. So what do you guys think? I mean, are you guys high on him? What's your thoughts on Jordan Kawaguchi?
Yeah, I feel like I should bounce in here because I just posed the question to Haley Salvian the other night on Sens Hour. But I ran a poll that offered three suggestions, I guess, Matt Kierstad, Jordan Kawaguchi, and Rhys Gaber. From UND, the three free agents that are all—I mean, they all look fantastic—and right. they're all going to be NHL players. Like, I think that's pretty clear, or at least get NHL contracts. Kawaguchi is my personal favorite. He also won the Twitter poll that I put out. Haley Salvian seemed to think that Rhys Gaber might actually be the best fit of those three. And I think she had some fair points. I think she, you know, mentioning that he does play with Shane Pinto right now.
And he is a freshman, if I believe, right?
He is a freshman. He is electric with Pinto. I've been like, they have such good chemistry. I've been loving watching them play together as well. I mean, like, I think Kawa's kind of proven himself, because even last year he was in talks of winning the Hobie Baker, right? But yeah, like with yeah, I mean, let's just take the whole team at this point.
Yeah. North of Belleville, Fighting Sens. Let's go.
Yeah. Awesome. And there's been talks as well with the Canadian division maybe coming, you know, to an end. I mean, you know, the provincial government isn't really in agreement with the NHL right now. So I did see a tweet pop up on our timeline mentioning that some Canadian teams might be playing in the United States this year, just based off the fact that they might not be able to get a vaccine for the players. So what do you guys think about the Sens maybe potentially playing in the U.S. because I know if they were playing in Ottawa and fans were allowed, I'd jump on that opportunity and I'd be at every single game most likely. But if that was the case, if this talk about Canadian teams playing in the U.S., obviously you would keep the Atlantic division most likely. So how do you think that will come about? Because realistically, we're almost 1 month away from a season starting. So this is a big change in talks and from what we've heard for the most part of the last 2 months. What do you guys think?
I think if you can let them play, if there's no way that you can get fans in the stadium, doesn't matter where they play. Mm-hmm. As long as it's televised and it's not like horrible quality television that's like, you know, the camera's on the same level as the ice, you know, nothing like that, but you get a good quality rink. It doesn't matter where they play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just as long as they start playing.
I'm literally sick of hearing about all the changes they're making and everything else. Yeah. Like I just want them to drop the puck.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
At this point, I don't even care if they're not playing in Ottawa. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, like, Just drop the puck. Just find a way how to get the two sides together and drop the puck.
Well,
I'm completely with you there, Derek.
And I think that's a big part with that is like Melnick. I don't know if tune in to listen to him on the podcast. What podcast was he on? I can't remember off the top of my head. But I remember listening to him when he was saying that that they want to sell 7,000 seats. They want to have 7,000 people in attendance. They figured it out social distance wise, like that's what they've anticipated. And I think that was kind of a big part for him with bringing back the season, because there was talks of like some owners saying, well, if we're not going to have fans, why are we even going to play? And that was kind of a big part of it, is they're like, well, we don't want to do a full regular season the way that we did the bubble. It's not going to be profitable. We need to have at least some fans in attendance. So I think that was a big push. And now it's just like, okay, well, is this going to get figured out in Canada? Like what's going to happen? It's so difficult. And I mean, like as annoying as it is, it's also hard to blame the league. It's hard to like pinpoint anyone and say like, okay, like why can't you guys figure this out? Because it's such a difficult situation, and hockey's so unique in the sense that there's so many Canadian teams versus other sports, mm-hmm. where with the NBA, they're just able to send Toronto down to the States, yeah. and have them play there. Right.
Like, or even in the MLB when they sent Toronto to Buffalo.
Exactly.
Like, same thing.
Exactly. But it's like, can you do that with seven teams?
No, maybe. Not really. Like,
yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it makes sense. And I agree, if there's not going to be any fans in attendance, then why not just let them play? I don't know. It's hard. It's difficult. I just want to see it get figured out. I'm sick of reading about it too. Every day it's like, okay, like I feel like the carrot's being jingled in front of our faces. Like I just want to see it get resolved. I just want to watch some hockey. I'm fired up for the World Juniors. At least we got some players to be excited about there.
And you know, if they do end up playing in the United States, Brad Elliott Schlossman, actually, he made a funny point. He says, let me guess where Ottawa will end up playing its home games. Where do you guys think they're going to end up playing their home games? Because obviously,
Flint, Michigan.
No. It would be hilarious, though, if they ended up playing their home games at the University of North Dakota. I that would just be so funny to cap off the end of 2020 and the start of 2021. I mean, especially if you plan on bringing guys like Pinto and JBD at the end of the year. Well, I mean, they're already there, right? So, I mean,
I've already become a UND fan just by watching them. Just, it's, you know, that'd be really cool. Jacob saying that he'd love it too.
Their commentator might have the best voice in professional sports. He could be in the NHL if he wanted to be.
I said to some of the guys, I said, that's the next person I want from the UND program, I guess, to come on and join the Sens. That's the next guy I want to come. If it's not Brad Berry, their head coach, coming on, I want their play-by-play guy. And I think he would be awesome to, for Sens games, for sure.
I just want to see him record some things on Audible so I can fall asleep to his voice every night. Like, it's magnificent.
It's soothing, isn't it? Okay, so next topic here. Actually, this caused sort of a stir, I think, for some people online. For me, it's not that big of a deal, but it's it's ads on helmet. You know, we'll probably see something where the NHL is trying to make up for money that they've lost. I mean, we've seen every team release the reverse retros. That obviously helps that case. I mean, but still, a lot of people, you know, don't have much money this year in terms of the owners willing to spend. And I think, you know, one thing they're going to take a look at is definitely putting ads on helmets. So, I mean, do you guys like that idea? Does it bother you? Because I know we've seen it in Europe and, you know, people aren't very thrilled about it. They don't want that. But for me, just a simple sticker on a helmet is really not that big of a deal. So what do you guys think?
As long as they don't staple it on like they do in Europe, like NASCAR, just one little sticker here and there, whatever. That's just fine.
Monster right across.
The
name on the back.
Or you get these helmets that start doing like actual deals with Monster, and you get a Monster shaped hockey helmet.
Hey, I like the Red Bull helmet though that Roby or Venti gets to wear from time to time. That thing, we could bring that in.
See, and then, maybe you can. And there's a perfect example of where advertising worked. Advertising that's actually kind of appealing. It's not that bad. Yeah. To see that Red Bull on his helmets, whatever.
Maybe maybe he can bring it to Ottawa with him when he comes to camp, and maybe he can stick around that way. But we'll see, eh?
But we should try to get him to keep the golden helmet. Just keep the golden helmet for the NHL.
But yeah, no, I
memorabilia.
the way the NBA brought in advertisements, like just the little like wish logo on
the Lakers, perfect.
and it's like it like Sun Life for the Raptors, if it still is. But I actually think it looks sharp. I actually think it complimented the jersey in a lot of way. And like, I have no problem. Like if the league's hurting for money, why shouldn't they make money off advertisements? Like who are we like as a fan, like, is it really going to bother me that much that they have Tim Hortons written on their helmet? Like it's not going to like, I'm not even going to notice it half the time. I might end up buying more coffee because I'm going to fall victim to it. But aside from that, like, it's just like, it's not a big deal. If they're going to make money from it, like as long as it's not completely destroying the look of their jerseys, I doubt it will. They just put how much money into these reverse retros.
Like, exactly like you said, the way the NBA did it, perfect. Like just do it like that, simple, quick little logo on the corner of the jersey or somewhere that's not like the main focal point of the jersey, and you're set. Like,
yeah, again, I'm gonna go back to my last point. Like, I don't care if they're wearing a goddamn antenna out there, like I just want to see hockey. So if that means that they have to wear a small advertisement on their helmet,
so be it.
Who cares?
Exactly.
I mean, hey, look, with the Sens releasing their new, you know, their new jerseys and their look and everything, I would hate for like a blue ad on the middle of their helmet. I think that would really bother me. I mean, I understand it, but I would not be pleased. I mean, I wouldn't care if it's like a Timmy's or, you know, Canadian Tire logo even. But even then, someone made a point. I think it's Lalim's Martian on Twitter. He said, "Oh, it looks like a big stop sign at the on the middle of your helmet." So maybe a Timmy's would be more subtle. I don't know if they'll put that much thought into it to make it look good with their uniforms. I don't really care, but I think it would irritate me a little.
I don't even know if it's going to be like a front and center kind of thing. Like I don't think they're going to put a big Tim Hortons logo stapled to the front of someone's helmet. You know. Yeah, I think it's definitely more likely to be just a little thing at the back of the helmet that you'll, whenever they zoom in on those like corner angles on the ice, you'll see them, and you'll see them in little like clips here and there, but it's nothing going to be more than that. And I don't think that's all it needs to be more than that.
You don't want the NHL to turn into Europe. Like you don't want to see, you know, like you said, you don't want to see it looking like NASCAR where they're out there with, you know, logos everywhere. And it takes away from the look. It takes away from the jersey, hat on the helmet, whatever. And yeah, to Nick's point, you don't want a blue logo. You don't want Facebook or anything across the helmet.
Uber.
Uber.
I'm waiting for Uber. I'm waiting for it. The amount of Uber fights that I had to help break up in front of the stadium, like I'm waiting for them to do an ad for Uber.
Boys, the only thing is like if we got like Timbits, like Tim Hortons, we would the amount of chirps Ottawa would get for that, like being called a Timbits hockey team, like we're never live another day. Like this is, I mean, I guess we've been through enough at this point that we can put up with being compared to 4 year olds. But that's the only thing.
But
how many times have we heard? Go ahead.
I was just gonna say
how many times we heard Leaf fans chirp us for the O sweater, saying it, you know, that's the amount of Stanley Cups you've won or whatever.
It's like the too many losses for the TML on their jerseys too.
Yeah, there you go.
That's actually funny because there was a point that was brought, I think it was 2 days ago. It was circling. I think it was I'm not sure who posted it, but it was the whole NHL and how many playoff wins teams have gotten since, I think, the last 20 years. And I think it was clear that Ottawa was number one in terms of Canadian teams with the playoff wins in the last 20 years. So it just goes to show. I mean, we've been closer than Toronto has. And
we got the most playoff series wins from a Canadian team over the last 20 years. And we've also been the closest to the finals.
Yeah, exactly. So that just says it all. So that's where I'll end my point for that. But next bit of news, it's sort of a bit of general NHL talk. Actually, Henrik Lundqvist came out today with a statement to say that he won't be playing this year. It's unfortunate, but he says, I think it was something about a heart condition. The doctors have been telling him not to play. It sucks because I think, you know, for him, he really wanted to win a cup. And I think he goes down as one of the best goalies not to win a cup. There's obviously others, but I think a lot of us were just, you know, it was a little thing that we were hoping to see is Henrik play in Washington. I think it was a good fit for him too. So it is unfortunate. And, you know, what do you guys think of that?
Well, first off, you never want to see a player retire. Like, especially at one of his stature, you never want to see that end. Mm-hmm. It's a run of brilliance, and you know he will be sorely missed in the NHL. But at the same time, it just felt wrong to me that he was going to Washington. It almost felt like Ovechkin going and signing with the Penguins. You know what I mean? They've been rival teams their his entire career, and now he's going and jumping ship to be with them. I just felt like it. I don't know. I may be completely off in saying this, but I'd rather him finish his career as a Ranger I'd rather finish his last game in a Ranger jersey than in a Washington jersey.
I mean, I think Washington is going to be missing him this year. I think like with Holtby going on, or like moving on to Vancouver, and then bringing in Lundqvist, you honestly, like, I just thought that was such a good fit. Ilya Samsonov really looks like he's the real deal there. But to have a veteran that can come in and play, well, I guess in a full season, it'd be like 30, 40 games. That's going to be missed. That definitely stings. I know he was excited to play in Washington. He hasn't officially announced his retirement, so we don't know what's to come. He says he's going to be back in a couple months with an official statement talking about his full career. But yeah, I mean, like, with a heart issue, it's just kind of another one of those things. Like there's bigger things than hockey, and we hate to see it. But man, he brought so much personality to the game, so much style to the game. I'll miss him being in the league if he's done, for sure.
Yeah, obviously, I have to. Sorry.
I'll mention mine after. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say I agree with Noah, kind of what he said. In that it would just be super weird to see Lundqvist playing for anyone really, other than the Rangers, let alone their rivals. But you know, obviously, it's horrible that he had to end this way, I guess, with a heart condition preventing him from playing. So you never want to see that, but at the same time, I do agree with the sentiment of, you know, him ending his career as a Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's another thing. Actually, this is past news, but you know, one guy we won't see retire as a Washington Capital is Alexander Ovechkin. He actually said in a Russian television interview, he actually said he wants to end his career in Russia playing for his home team, Dynamo Moscow. So that's another guy we won't see, you know, his legacy end where he began. Well, actually, I guess in the case he did begin in Dynamo Moscow. So in that sense, it does end where he begins, but not for the NHL Washington Capitals. So that's a bit unfortunate. And also, other news, this is quite funny. I don't know what you guys will think of it, but Jágr is actually 48. He is coming back for another season here, boys.
Wonder, man.
He's probably in better shape like now at 48 years old than I've ever been in my entire life. So
you think he's going to come knocking on another Canadian team door? The one team he ever tried to be on, the one Canadian team was Calgary. And yeah. he didn't enjoy it there.
No, I mean, I think he's probably what? He's probably dating 19, 20-year-old Czech models again and in his home country. He's probably doing pretty good. He plays for the team that he owns, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's like Kladno. But I think like good for him to keep riding it out. I remember I've heard him like spinning checklists before. I think it was like Keith Yandel or maybe it was Hayes that was talking about just playing with Jágr and like after the game, like him looking at them and being like, "Oh, are you coming down to Miami? Like we're gonna drink." And it just seems like he just has that that wheel snipe party attitude all the way through, which is great to see. And what a legend he was in the game too.
Good for Jágr. I mean, if you can do it, you can do it. And he's obviously still in shape, and as long as he's still repping that mullet, then all the power to him.
That's the fountain of youth. It's the mullet.
Yeah, he needs to trademark that. He needs to find a way to just brand that mullet. Somehow.
I mean, he didn't really, but there is the traveling Jágrs that do go around with the hairdo.
Yeah,
so, it's unofficially there. Yeah.
Yeah, unofficially. Sure. It's unofficially trademarked.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Green Man.
All right. So before we touch on your prospect rankings here, boys, I just want to touch on a little bit of the World Juniors. So the World Juniors are coming up, and obviously, I think we're all excited about that because this year is quite different. It's a bubble situation. I don't really have expectations, but that's sort of what I want to get into with you guys. It's sort of expectations versus realities. What do you guys hope to see? But what do you think is most realistic? So if you guys want to start off with that.
I think you hope to see Stutzel dominate. You hope to see, you know, you hope to see everybody dominate, really. All of the Sens prospects. But in reality, it's hard, especially for Stutzel, it's hard to think that he's going to absolutely dominate, especially since one of his big wingmen on his line aren't going to be there in Thomas Reichel or Lucas Reichel. So it just seems tough for one player that's going to have to go against the 20-something first-round picks, 20-odd first-round picks from Team Canada, you know?
I think he's still going to be, like, I don't expect Germany to do well, but I expect him to put up good numbers. I think that he's going to, I think he'll still be explosive to watch, and he's going to have some highlight reel plays. At least that's kind of what my expectations are, just because he did it already last year, right? So I think just going into it, but it's definitely a huge loss, and not being able to have Moritz Seider there as well, that really affects them, because Germany like actually has some really good upcoming young talent, but it's got JJ Paterka, so maybe they can do something, but it's gonna be a lot for two guys to wear. That's the thing that's always tough about the World Juniors, right? Is there's always those like Team Canada where there's two guys that on their team that are two players on their team that weren't selected in the first round, something like that. And then you look at like a team like Germany, and they play against each other, and they have two guys that were drafted total, maybe, right? Or it's a little higher than that, I guess, for them. But Austria, so it's tough because there's just like those teams. It's so hard to see them go against each other, but I think that he'll still shine. He'll still have his games. I'm excited to see Roby Järventie. I think that, especially, I don't know if he's going to play with Anton Lundell on that first line, but I'm really excited to see him in Finland. I think that this could be a really big coming out party for him, where people watching the tournament are like, okay, yeah, this kid's good. I think this is really going to be his chance, and Maybe Tyler Cleven too. I think I expect Jake Sanderson to be one of the best defensemen in the tournament for sure.
But that's we look at these players and we don't really look at any of these guys. Okay, they're like the third, fourth line, whatever, right? Most of these guys are pretty, you know, they're pretty sought after for their team. You know, like Stutzel's one of how many guys that are going to be really good for Germany.
Yeah,
Sanderson's like exactly. Like Sanderson is he's one of the better defensemen that's going to be on that USA team. We don't really have guys that look like they just made the team because they made the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, three of the four players that are in for the Senators are probably going to be playing prominent roles, and then Tyler Cleven is probably not going to be playing a prominent role, or you know, there's a chance he doesn't even play a game.
But I think there's more of a chance for Tyler Cleven to get in games than we've seen in years past with some other guys. You know what I mean? Like some guys, I don't know. It feels like Cleven has all of the abilities to push his way onto the roster and really make a name for himself. Like all these other guys have already done that, or at least for the Sens, they look like they've already done that. Cleven looks like he has the ability to, but we haven't really seen a whole lot of that in recent years. We've seen, you know, a couple guys at the top of their teams. We haven't seen four.
These are four
guys that are really, really good.
I think he'll play a game at least. Like, I think he'll play a game, which I guess like in previous years, maybe not every guy was given that chance. But yeah, I think that if he plays, he probably isn't going to play more than 10, 11 minutes a game. I mean, that's no knock on Tyler Cleven. I mean, like, he wasn't even expected to be at camp originally. He was, kind of just brought in last minute. And it's just that it just kind of speaks to the depth this year, how good a lot of these teams are. And, the American coach came out and said that their strengths are goaltending. They have Spencer Knight and defense. And he's going to be competing with some really good talent there. So, but yeah, I mean, like, honestly, just for him to be on the team, massive honor. Good for him for getting there. He's off to a really good start in the year. And yeah, I hope he plays that one game. Looks incredible, and the coach can't take him out of the lineup.
Yeah, I think personally, Cleven's the one guy I'm kind of on the fence about in terms of, you know, would we prefer him being at the World Juniors and maybe getting a game or two with, you know, 10 minutes? Or would we prefer him staying at UND and UND, who's really injured right now and doesn't have a whole lot of players there? Cleven would probably be playing a way more prominent role, probably a top four role right now at UND. So,
yeah,
you know, developmentally, it's not a huge deal when it comes to the big picture. Mm-hmm. I liked what I seen from Cleven. I was pleasantly surprised from the UND games that I watched. My expectation is that we'll see Timmy Stützle be Timmy Stützle, with maybe some exceptions, because he is coming off of an injury. So we should maybe temper our expectations just a little bit.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah, when it comes to Stützle. But he's going to stand out for Team Germany. And Jake Sanderson, I have a ton of expectation for Jake Sanderson. I think he's really, really wanting to prove that he has an offensive game and wanting to show some of these analytic people that he's much more than a defensive defenseman.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing I mentioned on last week's episode. I actually wanted to see him go up against Bowen Byram and actually look like the better defenseman. Sort of just because we missed out on Bowen Byram, but also just because I think Jake Sanderson is if not on his level, a bit higher than Bowen Byram. And I think, you know, his offensive game will come, and I'm very excited to see that. But also just on Tyler Cleven, if he doesn't end up playing many games, I'd love to see him come in for a few games, just the same way Jamie Drysdale came in last year for Team Canada and actually did really well the games that he did play. And I'd love to see that from Tyler Cleven. I think if he can use, you know, his physical presence and, you know, be a part of a game changing situation where, you know, you change the tides of the game, I think that's really important for him as a player. I think that's the role he sort of plays is a big presence on the ice, especially, you know, laying those hits. He's not afraid. And I think guys that are his age, I think will give him more confidence to just be bigger and be stronger against these guys and sort of stand out in that sense. I'd love to see that. And for Timmy, me and you, Derek, sort of had at it on Twitter. We talked about him going up against Byfield and sort of getting to see Byfield and what we could have had if the LA took Timmy at number two. I'm excited to see them go up against each other because sort of we didn't really get the chance to see that last year because Byfield didn't really play that much. I don't think he played many games anyway. But this year, I think Byfield is expected to have a really big role on Team Canada, or he's expected of it. So I'd assume that he does have a good tournament. But still, if he doesn't and Timmy goes out and on a weaker team, evidently, I think that December 26th game is going to be real interesting to watch. I think a lot of Sens fans are going to tune in for that. I know you're excited for that, Derek. So,
yeah, I think Byfield has probably more to prove than Tim Stützle.
Like, yeah.
Byfield's playing a prominent role. The spotlight is basically on him now when it comes to the forwards. I know, obviously, Canada has other good players, but he's going to get a top six role. He's basically ran out of excuses when it comes to international play. And I'm a huge Quinton Byfield fan and believer. I think he's going to be a great player in the NHL. But I always had Tim Stützle ahead of Quinton Byfield. He's my guy. So I think in the long run, we're going to see Tim Stützle outperform Quinton Byfield.
Mm-hmm. Now, Derek, I just wanted to ask you. So you mentioned Tyler Cleven, maybe for development, he'd be better off staying back and playing at North Dakota. How did you feel about Michigan's coach not letting Owen Power go to Team Canada after Matthew Beniers and a few of the other players, Brisson, Cam York, are going to play for Team USA?
Honestly, I wasn't up on that until you mentioned it, to be honest. But it's about development for some of these kids. There's also, you know, NHL teams that aren't allowing their prospect to go and play because it will align with the training camps. You know, Lafreniere being one of them, obviously.
Yeah. So just to brief you on that, then, just so I'm not like speaking out of context. So. The coach came out and said basically that he elected not to send Owen Power to Team Canada camp because Team Canada had very extensive quarantine protocols. So basically, like, the date that Power would have had to have been there, he would have been gone for, I think it was something like 5 to 6 weeks that he would have been gone from University of Michigan. And they're saying, they're like, you know what, this kid's a freshman. He's in his first year of school. He knows like the responsibility that school brings. I think it's best for his studies and everything to stay put. With that being said, though, I mean, like, you're anticipated to go first overall. This is a chance to potentially solidify going first overall, and your coach is not letting you go. I would be so upset myself.
Yeah.
I think the kid has to be furious. I mean, this is the one tournament that everyone has eyes on, that everyone's looking at. And I think we overvalue this tournament way too much. Like, you know, it's a very small sample size. And a lot of people, this is the only opportunity that they get, especially, you know, quote unquote Twitter scouts. But you have people on Twitter making their full kind of proclamation about a player based on this 5 to 7 game sample that they see these players play. And it's ridiculous. But at the same time, this is an opportunity for Owen Power to become a household name. You know, as you said, this is a player that could very well go up there with, you know, Ratty and some of the other talent that's coming next year. So this was an opportunity for him to showcase that. And I'm disappointed that he's not playing, and I'll be honest, I didn't even know that that was the case. So that's disappointing.
Yeah, I just found out a few days ago to you. Sorry.
No. It's just funny that he's not the only high-end prospect missing the tournament. I2 Ratty is also missing that tournament, which is you know, quite shocking, I think, for a lot of people, because I know they were excited to see him. So it is unfortunate that we don't get to see those guys play this year. There's also Shane Wright, who got cut from Team Canada. I mean, he'll probably have another opportunity next year, but still, it is unfortunate. I think a lot of people were waiting to see Shane Wright and Aiti Raadi on the ice. And I think for Team Finland, it's kind of a weird situation. That's some expectations I have for them are really mixed because I really want them to succeed. I think, you know, having Robi Järventi on that team just makes me more interested to see how they do. But they did cut Patrick Puistola, which is another, you know, drafted player. You know, I think he was their leading scorer last year. And obviously, Aiti Raadi again. That's another guy that probably a lot of people thought he'd have a big role this year, especially showcasing his skill for the upcoming draft. That's a weird situation, but we've seen teams do it. Like I mentioned earlier, Shane Wright getting cut and other players like that. So it's not new to see that Owen Power did not get sent off to the world tournament. But I mean, you know, what do you guys think of other teams doing that? And do you think, you know, Finland sort of messed that up with the chance to see those players, or do you think it's a good call on their part?
Well, for Finland, I mean, Raadi has at least started this season on a down note. He doesn't look exactly the first overall caliber that he looked all last season. So this really, and like guys like Owen Power not getting an opportunity at this World Juniors, this really brings out a potential for guys like Brad Lambert and like those guys who are going to be like representing their teams and representing their countries and representing the team. And really, I mean, for Lambert especially, he should be stepping into a pretty prominent role there with Sweden.
And Finland, but he has a dual citizenship. He could have played for Team Canada, but I think he opted for Team Finland because I know he'll have a bigger role, and probably he wouldn't have made the team for Team Canada. But I think this way, for playing for Finland, he'll have a big role and he'll be able to, you know, showcase what he's all about. And I think, you know, for a lot of guys, like his stock might rise. Like he might end up having a great tournament. He's what, only 16, I believe, still.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, this is a huge opportunity for a guy like him, especially he's not going in next year's draft. He's going in the next year after 2022, right? Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
So I think this is a big step for him playing against, you know, some older competition. If he does have a good tournament, or at least a consistent tournament, you know, if he does well, I think that's just going to raise some eyebrows. And I think Brad Lambert is very you know, if you compare him to guys like Matthew Savoy and Shane Wright, he's the third man out. And I think this is an opportunity for him to prove guys wrong and maybe make a case for the first overall pick in his draft year.
Boy, is that draft going to be something. With those three, especially at the top. All three of them are megastars, right?
Hopefully we finish 1 point out of a playoff spot and are able to win first overall in the draft lottery.
Could you imagine?
Well, that would be insane. And you know what, boys? I just want to get into your prospect ranking because, I mean, we're getting into a lot of prospects right now. So, I mean, you guys did write a joint piece. I think we're all excited to see what you guys have as your rankings. I know we all have different opinions, and that's the beauty of it. I think, you know, people are allowed to share their opinions, and I think you guys have good points as to why you put them in certain places in your rankings. So without further ado, just talk us through it and, you know, why you guys put some guys in certain selections on your list.
Yeah, I think we agreed on quite a few, actually. The first two, I mean, there's some controversy within the first two.
Yeah.
If you look at, you know, a lot of people have at number two, at least at number one, I think everyone has Tim Stützle. And I don't know that we need to spend a ton of time, you know, explaining why we have Tim Stützle. He's a third overall pick. You know, Timmy Superstar, as they call him, he's going to be in Ottawa, if not this year, next year, and he'll probably be a very good player. But at number two, we both had Jake Sanderson. And in my mind, I've said this before on Senzauer podcast, but in my mind, he's going to be Ottawa's best defenseman in the future. Mm-hmm. I have him better than Thomas Chabot in the future. I think value-wise, like I'm not saying he's going to outproduce Thomas Chabot points-wise, but I think value-wise, I have Jake Sanderson being Ottawa's best defenseman. So to me, it was a no-doubter at number two. And Brendan, why did you have Sanderson?
Yeah,
ahead of Brandstrom.
So I thought it was funny, like when we touched base to write this article and we kind of started going through, and I was like, oh, I'm really high on Sanderson and I'm really high on Yarventi. And you're like, I'm high on Sanderson. I'm high on Yarventi. I'm high on Formanton. And I was just like, oh, maybe we don't need us. Maybe one of us can just write this article. It's going to be the same. For myself, like, I think you made a lot of good points with Jake Sanderson. Like I think that he has the potential to be a better player than Thomas Chabot. I agree. I think that I think that there's so much raw potential there in the terms of what he does have are abilities that some players or a lot of players are just never going to be able to develop. Like he's physical. He is an incredible skater and he has elite hockey sense. And if you don't have a decent sized body, you don't have a good skating stride and you don't read the game well, those aren't really skills that you can figure out. But you can figure out how to have a better shot. You can figure out when it's the right time to pinch. You can figure out certain things like that, which are kind of the additions that he's learning on his game. And I feel like when I think of Jake Sanderson, I think that he's building a castle. I literally envision him as a castle. And I just see this foundation that's being built and it's incredible. And it's just going to be laying those extra bricks on top, maybe put a knight at the top of it. And like this guy is going to be the real deal. Like I'm so set on him. I became such a big fan of him coming into this draft. It's weird. I've never watched a defenseman and scouted a defenseman, watched the defensive ability as much as I did with Jake Sanderson, because that was his unique skill set. That's what he's really good at, and you just don't see a lot of players like that. Exactly. I see. Like, I truly think that he has the potential to turn into a Roman Josi or even a Scott Niedermeyer. I could see him be like a Scott Niedermeyer type, and yeah, I'm really high on him. I do like Brännström. I had Brännström at 3. I feel like I really, when I was writing this, I was really trying to be like, okay, like just because I've gotten impatient with a guy, I shouldn't knock him down just because I wanted to see him be better than what he is at this point in his career. I shouldn't knock him down. And I mean, Brännström's still so young. He's making such incredible strides, and like his potential to quarterback a power play in the Capital is there. Like I totally think he's going to run a power play in Ottawa. I think that's a no doubter. But yeah, it's hard with his size. And I think like just that aspect of it, and just the way that Sanderson's going to be able to be plugged into so many different situations, he can play 30 minutes a night. Like, and with Brännström, I just don't know if he's ever going to be a 30 minute a night kind of guy. I think he's going to be more of like a play on the power play, play in those optimal, when you're in the offensive zone, he better be on the ice. And that's going to kind of more so be his strength.
Sanderson just feels like he can play anywhere. You can play him power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, overtime, wherever you need him, whenever you need him, defensive zone, offensive zone. He feels like he's got the perfect tool set for that kind of player. As a defenseman too, it's very, very fun to see.
I just want to touch on, Brennan, your top 3 is Stützle, Sanderson, and Brännström. Okay. And I really like that because I think a lot of people aren't so high on Brännström anymore. I know I am. I love the player that he is. And Dorion today called him a foundational player, and he's very happy with his development in Switzerland. So I think we should expect some big things from Brännström. I think this is the time for him to do it. I think he's more accustomed to NHL style of hockey. He's had some games and he did well in Belleville. I think a lot of people still don't realize that he actually had a good year. So he's got almost
point per game.
Exactly.
Point per game.
Yeah. So I think people grow impatient with him just, and with defensemen too, like how quick were we with Lassie Thompson too, right? We talked about it the last time I was on the podcast with, he got scratched. He got scratched. His career's over. It's like, defensemen take a long time to develop. Like that's what it is. And undersized defensemen, especially, and Eric Brännström is undersized. There's no two ways about that. But with that being said, I think that his potential isn't going anywhere. He is, I wouldn't say he's an elite skater, But I would say that his puck control and like just his stick work and everything, in terms of being able to stick handle and everything like that, and just how smooth he is, that's a lead. And yeah, I mean, I still think that he's going to be I think he's going to be an incredibly fun player to watch in the NHL.
For sure.
I agree with you as well. I mean, we had the first three identical. So, I mean, I had Brännström at three as well. So, I have his breakout passing as probably his most prominent skill right now. I think he can hit someone with a breakout pass like 200 feet away, right on the tape in stride. I like that about Brännström. I think he has a lot more to work on and a lot more question marks when compared to Sanderson. And that's why I have Brännström ranked lower. But offensively speaking, obviously he has more potential than Sanderson.
Yeah.
So if you're looking, you know, strictly as an offensive defenseman, Erik Brännström has a higher ceiling.
All right. So I just want you guys to take us from 3 to 10, because I think this is where it sort of gets tricky. Man. I mean, I think this is where you guys sort of went different paths into your rankings, because I know a lot of people have different opinions. I mean, the top three, it makes a lot of sense, I think, for everyone. I think we all agree on that. But from 3 to 7, from 4 to 7, I should say, that's where it gets tricky. So I'd love to hear what you guys have on that one.
I think all the way, I think from 4 until 12 is hard. 4 until 13 even. And I think like that was kind of the big thing, like with Derek and I, when we were putting this together, like even just looking at his list. I know, so not to spoil it, but Derek, you have Formanton at 4, is it?
Yeah, I have him much higher than a lot of people do. Yeah.
And I love that. But like, for me, it's just like, for me, I have I have Pinto at 4. I feel like that's kind of conflicting, because it'd be really easy to plug Norris or Batherson in at 4 just because of what they've proven. But when I was doing this list, at least, and I think Derek kind of approached it the same way, like I was looking at potential. I was like, you know what? I know what Norris and Batherson accomplished last year and the last 2 years, and it's been nothing short of impressive. But for me, it's just the way that Shane Pinto has improved, just his development curve has been through the roof. This is a kid who didn't take hockey seriously until he was 15 years old. He thought he was going to go to the MLB. Like, and then he watched Crosby, and it was Crosby and Scheifele, he said, in I think it was the 2016 playoffs, and just saw how dominant they were. And he's like, that could be me. Why can't that be me if I work hard enough? And I just think like just the fact that he was a real late round pick in the USHL, and he's turned into, quite honestly, one of the best players in college hockey right now. I think that like his ceiling is just through the roof. He's a little bit taller than Norris as well. And I think that goes a long way. So strong. And he just keeps finding new games of his or new parts of his game to develop. And that's why I have him at 4. I have him as with potential to turn into a star player. I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to lose a faceoff again, boys.
Yeah.
And I mean, we started this list before we got to see Pinto play this year. And then as I was watching Pinto play, I kind of wanted to hop on, you know, Brennan's train and put Pinto at number 4, because I just think he's so close to reaching his potential. Like I had a lot more doubts before this season started about Pinto's ability to become a top 6 center. I thought he was maybe more suited to play in the top 9. And then when I watched him this year, I was like, no, there's no doubt. This guy really doesn't have a weakness. He's pretty much strong everywhere. But for me, Alex Formanton, I went with Formanton simply because speed is so important in today's game. And I think Formanton, he's not just fast. Like, he's Connor McDavid fast. And you can't say that about very many players at all. Like, his speed with the puck is untouchable. And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think that transferable skill is much easier than some of these other transferable skills when we're talking about, you know, how this player is going to transfer their abilities and their skills to the NHL level. I think Formanton's going to get like 2 breakaways a game. And as long as he learns how to finish, he's going to convert on a lot of those. So for me, Formanton has to be up in the top 5. But that's a controversial one because we do have a deep prospect pool. You know, a lot of people have Norris a lot higher than both of us do. A lot of people have Drake Batherson much higher than we do, but I have Formanton up there and Brennan, you have Pinto up there. What do you guys think?
That's the glorious part about this is that everybody's list seems like it's different. I mean, I personally would probably put, Brännström at three, or not Brännström, sorry, Batherson at three. I've been very, very high on Batherson. I think he's been a fantastic player, and I think he's the sky's the limit for this guy. The one thing that I have about him is that he's kind of skating a little bit, but other than that, he still gets to pucks quite, you know. I remember a goal specifically last year where he broke in right off the faceoff and got his own rebound for a goal, and it was that right there. That was a perfect rendition of what he's going to be doing for the next, you know.
He reminds 10, me a lot 15 of years. A lot of Mark Stone, like and not just because they're both on Ottawa, but just the way that, like, not great skaters, but just their hockey IQ is so good, and they can put the puck through the net. I had him. We'll just run through these. So number five, I threw in Roby Järventi. So basically, we had it broken into tiers, and I went elite, star, and then so Stützle and Sanderson are in the elite tier, and then we had Pinto and Brännström in that star tier, and then we have a lot of guys who are in the top six forward, top four D tier boys on up and coming for the Sens. And to start that off, I had Roby Järventi, and the reason that I had him the highest out of all of the other options is because, if in my opinion, if there's one guy, one forward who's going to score 35 goals in the NHL for Ottawa out of these guys, it's going to be Roby Järventi. I think his shot is already NHL caliber. His transition game is so good. And I recently read an article in The Athletic, I think it was Corey Perlman that wrote it, and it talked about how Järventi is developing this ability to kind of go undetected when he's in the offensive zone and he's sneaking in. And there was all this film on him kind of sneaking in undetected, getting to these open areas, and then all of a sudden finding a rebound, finding a pass. And I think in order to score 30 to 35 goals in the NHL, that's something you need to be elite at. Like, that is why Alex Ovechkin has been so successful at scoring goals, because even though it's Alex Ovechkin, he still finds a way to get open. He still finds a way to get into his slots. And just seeing that your events, he's working on that. This is a kid, again, raw potential. I just think it's through the roof for him, what he can turn into. Who did you have at five, Derek?
So at my number five spot, I had Drake Batherson. So for, you know, much of the same reasons we talked about earlier, he's got good size. And he's got great hockey IQ. I think he needs to work on his acceleration a little bit. But other than that, I think he'll pan out to be a top six player. I'll just read through, you know, my five right through to the bottom of my list. And if there's, you know, something that pops out at you guys, feel free to, you know, to jump in and say, why do you have that guy so low or this guy so high? So at six, I have Logan Brown. At seven, Järventi. At eight, Pinto. And again, I said I was kind of willing to move him up. Josh Norris at number nine, which is, I know that's low for some people. Vitali Abramov at 10, JBD at 11. At 12, I have Ridley Gregg. At 13, I have Balcers. At 14, I have Igor Sokolov. And at number 15, I have Lassie Thompson.
He had that bump for coming on the podcast, wasn't it?
No,
he's the next Hossa, man. He's the next Hossa.
Honestly, I love Sokolov's shot. I think his shot is elite. I think, you know, there's some obvious things he needs to work on. You know, he's got to work on his foot speed. He did drop a lot of weight. Like, he dropped.
Yeah,
I think he told us he dropped. He's still huge, right? But he dropped like substantial weight, like 20 plus pounds. So hopefully, you know, he can have a lot more speed and a lot more acceleration. I want to see him at the AHL level, and I kind of want to see him get a call up.
So I did want to ask, you have Vitali Abramov quite a bit higher than I thought, you would, Derek. You want to just touch on sort of your thoughts on him?
Yeah, it's his offensive ceiling. I think his creativity is among the best in the prospect pool, right up there with Tim Stützle. Mm-hmm. I just think Abramov is one where the floor is not really there for this guy. So if he doesn't achieve his NHL ceiling, I don't think he's going to be an NHL player. So it's tough when it comes to projectability for Abramov. He's a little bit older as well, so you have to take those things into account, right? But Abramov is extremely skilled. I mean, I watched him a lot in Belleville, and he didn't get a lot of minutes, but he didn't need a lot of minutes. Like, he's a tenacious kid. He's really creative. He sees the ice really well. But again, if he doesn't pan out, he's probably not an NHL player.
No, that's probably bang on.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Maybe I'll follow suit here and kind of just run through mine as well and see what you boys think. So at number six, I did have Josh Norris. I just think with his well-rounded game. And then Batherson at number seven. Formanton came in at number eight for me. And then I had Ridley Gregg after Formanton there. And then Logan Brown was the guy that slipped out of those players. And then Jacob Bernard-Docker, Vitaly Abramov, Rudolf Balzers, Lassie Thompson. And then at 15, I threw in Maxence Gonnet, the seventh round pick. I probably just butchered his name, Nick. I'm sorry that I'm not bilingual. but just the most English pronunciation. That was it for me. Unfortunately, Sokolov, Klevin, and Krokshank didn't make the list, but you know what? It kind of just speaks to how deep our prospect pool is.
And yeah, I love how you added guys that most people wouldn't have on their list. But I think that's the beauty of, you know, having different opinions. And I think, you know, I share a lot of, you know, the same thoughts that you have towards your rankings. I think I would relate to your rankings a bit more here, Brennan, but I love Maxence Gonnet. I think he's going to be a terrific player. I think he's one of those late pickups that people, you know, are still waiting to see what comes of it. I don't think people read into the late draft picks that much. I mean, he is a seventh round pick, right? So people aren't going to, you know, tune their attention towards him, but he's been really, really good so far in the queue. And I'm really excited to see, you know, if he can do well in Belleville eventually. I think that's where he'll start. But that's a guy I'm going to definitely keep my eye on. And I love you guys' takes. And I think that's what's a lot of people are going to, you know, tune into your article and get all this analysis and very deep review of these guys. And I think they'll get a bit of a better understanding where you guys are coming from. And I think that's the whole beauty of it, is different opinions. And, you know, everybody's going to have their own thoughts towards these rankings. But we're very excited to see your article, boys. And when you guys plan on launching it, because I really want to read it right now. So,
yeah, it'll be out. So it'll be out for everybody on Friday. So it should be out by the time this thing goes public, I guess.
Friday the 18th of December is the Friday he is referencing.
Awesome. Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, we do have a giveaway going on with that article piece that's going to be coming out. It won't be directly related to it, but I mean, we will tie into it as well. It's actually a piece. It's a photo. Brennan is actually the one supplying it, but it's a signed photo of Josh Norris at the World Juniors for Team USA. So if you want to win that, you'll have to follow the details in the description, but definitely read the piece, and it'll be tied a little bit to the giveaway. So stay tuned for that. And we're very happy to have you, boys. Thank you for coming on this week's podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure. Always happy to jump on and join you guys.
For sure. All right, we'll see you guys all next week, and thank you for listening.